Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, friends. Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks so much for being here. We're going to talk to Justice Mosqueda in just a moment. A couple quick updates before we get there. First of all, shout out to our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members, T1, Reggie White. Thanks, Reggie White. And Christopher Keller for becoming brand new members. Appreciate you guys a ton. If you haven't checked out memberships yet, make sure to do so. Extra episode coming up later this week with Aaron Nagler. Extra members Q&A coming up this week. So you're going to want to make sure to check those out. Also, a quick injury update presented by Habish, Habish, and Rotier. We did learn from Tom Silverstein that Marshawn Lloyd is officially done for the year. This is not having anything to do with his appendectomy or his appendicitis. There's another injury for Marshawn Lloyd. He re-aggravated his hamstring once again. So I think hamstring, hip, appendicitis, another hamstring. I think there might've been a couple other things along the way. Just a nightmare of an injury season for Marshawn Lloyd. Hopefully not a harbinger of things to come. It sounds like they are going to have him go down to Madison like they did last year with Stokes and Watson. Now, Watson has obviously had some injuries again this year. We'll talk about that in just a second. But no hamstring issues. No hamstring issues for either Eric Stokes or Christian Watson. And they did seem to sort of find a way to correct those. So hopefully that'll be the case with Marshawn Lloyd as well, but he is done for the season. Christian Watson, as mentioned, he did in fact tear his ACL. It sounds like there's the possibility that there is some other ligament damage as well. We'll talk about with Justice some of the things that Green Bay might need to do to try to replace Christian Watson, but a brutal situation for him. He's going to be in a contract year next year. Probably will not, I'd be willing to bet, probably not be ready to go at the start of the regular season next year, and is going to have to work his way back. And he is also a player that is very much predicated on his speed and his acceleration and his burst. And of course, you know, ACL injuries, and especially if there's other ligament damage, is not great for that. Feel bad for him. I know he'll bounce back, and hopefully Green Bay can get a healthy Christian Watson towards whatever portion of next year, middle of the year, late in the year, hopefully sooner. But it's going to take a long recovery process for Christian Watson, and just an unfortunate nature of the beast. Sometimes these injuries are brutal, and you hate to see it, but it's part of the game. And like I said, I'm sure he's going to bounce back strong, but a really tough update that we had to hear, an expected update, unfortunately, based on the injury that we saw on the field on Sunday. But again, he is done for not only the season, but for the foreseeable future with that ACL injury. No real update on Jordan Love or Malik Willis, other than the fact that LaFleur said he talked to both of them. Both of them seemed in good spirits, everything like that. But until we get to Wednesday and get a practice update, we're not going to have an update on either of those two. He did say he was optimistic on Quay Walker. I'm sure they're going to give him the week and see what he can do. But there did seem some level of optimism there. Seemed less optimistic about Evan Williams, saying he, you know, thinks he's going to be questionable for the week. And, you know, they don't know where they're at this moment. So not great there. But, you know, sometimes Matt says this stuff and then all of a sudden the player is practicing on Wednesday. So you never quite know, but we'll have to keep an eye on that as well. Zane Anderson is still in concussion protocol. And then for the Eagles, very noteworthy, Jalen Hurts also still in concussion protocol. And with that, let's get to our chat with the one and only Justice Mosqueda. All right, friends, we are being joined once again by the great Justice Mosqueda. You can find him, of course, at acmepackingcompany.com. You can find him on Twitter at JUMOSQ. Justice, it's been far too long. How the heck are you doing, my friend?
I'm good. We both overcoming an illness, so bug is getting around. Wash your hands, wash your butts, all that stuff.
Very much do so. And yeah, don't get this thing. It's not fun. And yeah, this is like the Jordan flu game for us. We're just fighting through and we're absolutely dominating with unbelievable takes all throughout. As usual, I will give you the floor to begin with. Obviously, a very disappointing game against the Bears. I'll let you go in any direction. What mattered, what didn't matter, what you cared about. What do you want to talk about, Justice?
My biggest worry is Jordan. I know I'm not really worried about this game. I understand it was kind of a half-hearted effort. Obviously, they wanted to win the game, but you're down so many guys, you lose your quarterback, you lose your wide receiver, who is a man beater on the same drive. That's tough to overcome. But the Jordan stuff, I mean, LaFleur has history with this, you know, nerve issue and the elbow that makes you lose feeling of your hand with another quarterback. His name was Marcus Mariota. If you guys remember LaFleur's first year or only year in Tennessee, their plan was, you know, Mariota was going to be the starting quarterback. And then he ends up dealing with that nerve issue that lasts multiple seasons. He doesn't look right until he's, you know, with the Raiders, right? Mariota.
Yep.
And they end up having to pivot to Ryan Tannehill. So while it may not seem serious with the Jordan situation, I am very interested on like a day-to-day basis when they're like, I just want to know when he's like, can feel his hand again. Cause that grip strength stuff is important. Yep. And I don't want to like spook people or anything, but LaFleur has dealt with this injury in the past and it has lasted multiple seasons for a previous starting quarterback. So I'm not just willing to be like, oh, this is a non-concerning coming into this week.
Correct me if I'm wrong. This can be much ado about nothing, or it can be something that lingers for a significant period of time, depending on what version you get, what range in the spectrum that you get. And hopefully, obviously, this is one of the lesser ones, that it's not a big deal, that he can go out there and be Jordan and not have to fight through this. Somewhat concerning, of course, that in his post-game presser, he was still saying it was still, you know, having numbness and it still didn't feel right. But yeah, if this is something that I think can have that spectrum to it, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it can just be, I mean, what was it? Florio reported, he was like, he got hit in the funny bone, right? So it can be something as simple as that, or it can be something as devastating as the Mariota injury, where it kind of takes multiple seasons to kind of get over and, you know, impacts your grip strength and stuff like that. Nerves are a tricky thing. I don't know how many buddies you got who are dealing with like sciatica issues and stuff. Like I have a bunch of friends who play college football and stuff, and you know, you get a slip disc or whatever, and they're just like, you know, dealing with that for long periods of time. So nerves are a tricky thing for sure. It's more of a, I would just like to be able to check in on a day-to-day basis, and hopefully by Sunday we know that, you know, Jordan Love is totally A-okay, can feel his hand, normal grip strength, all that stuff. I mean, I don't know how you felt. I thought it was a wrist injury at first, or a hand injury, something, because you know, you saw him, you know, shaking his wrist and stuff, and then yanking at his fingers. I thought it was a finger issue, and I was like, God dang it, he just broke his pinky, or he broke, you know, one of his bottom two fingers is what he was playing with. And then when they were like elbow, I was like, what the heck is going on? And then I was like, it must be a nerve issue. And then, you know, the announcers started talking about that, and I was like, okay, that's probably what it is. And that ended up getting confirmed at the end. So I think it makes more sense now. I think we know what it is. That's definitely something I want to monitor moving forward.
Well, it was interesting because what happened, so there was that play where it's the one where he shovels it off to Josh Jacobs, and Josh Jacobs ad-libs or whatever. And then there was also a 12 men on the field penalty. So they're sorting everything out. It's a kind of chaotic, and Jordan's getting checked out, like not on the sidelines, but like, I don't know how much they showed on the TV copy, but like just kind of like 5 yards still on the field. He wasn't even, you know, to the sidelines, and they're just, you know, he's, like you said, he's just kind of shaking out his hand a little bit. There was no real indication. Malik Willis was warming up on the sidelines, but he does that quite a bit through the course of a game. Like there's been times before where we've been up in the press box, like early in the season before we, you know, knew Malik better. And like he does this from time to time of like, oh, Malik Willis is warming up, and like starting to look for like something happened to Jordan, like trying to figure it out. But it's no, he just gets up and warms up from time to time throughout the course of the game. So it wasn't like completely out of the ordinary. And obviously he just has to be precautious. There's a trainer talking to Jordan, but it looked like, you know, just from upstairs, it looked like he really had no, you know, thought of kind of coming out of the game. And then I even tweeted out, like, Jordan's getting his hand checked out, and it looks like he's going to stay in the game. And then literally, like, right after that, they're like, nope. And, like, Willis goes in. So, yeah, it was sort of this, like, you went from thinking, yeah, it's probably much ado about nothing to, oh, yeah. And then there was obviously different points in the game where Love was warming up, and you're wondering, is he going to go back?
Yeah, out the half. They made it look like out the half that he was going to end up coming back to the game. You know, you saw him. We got the tight shots of him, you know, doing the hand exercises and stuff like that. It does seem like, I mean, it seems like we know what the injury is, right? It's a nerve issue in the elbow that causes issues with the grip strength and causes issues with his feeling in his hand. So, definitely don't want that for a starting quarterback, especially to his throwing hand. So,
and obviously not ideal either that Malik Willis ends up with a thumb injury in this game. So your backup QB is a little bit banged up. I also kind of wonder how much that played an issue or like a factor into some of like the fourth down jet sweep and things like that. I don't think it ended because he ended up throwing the ball pretty well later, but like there's just some interesting play calls that went into that too. I wonder if they were just trying to get through it and be like, we're just gonna have to run this thing the rest of the game. But obviously later he threw it mostly fine. But yeah, I don't think anyone, like, this is the weirdest quarterback situation right now because Jalen Hurts is still in concussion protocol. You've got Kenny Pickett, and then you got Tanner McKee, who's been playing recently, and then you've got Malik Willis and Jordan Love both banged up. Like, we're this close to Sean Clifford, Tanner McKee, than the premium Fox guy. I assume Love and Hurts are both going to play in this one, but it's definitely an interesting situation.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised either. I know Matt talked about it today where he was saying, you know, Goot has two available roster spots and stuff like that, and they're looking at what their options are to bring guys up. Goot brought up, you know, I think it was in the summer or it might have been in the spring. No, it was definitely post-draft because they drafted another quarterback, and then there was the potential to change the third quarterback role, right? At the spring league meetings. And I don't think they did anything with that. So what ends up happening right now, right? You can call up a third quarterback, but that third quarterback still has to be on your game day roster.
Yep.
The Packers have two open roster spots, and Goot in the past has said like, that's more of a playoff thing. Like that's something that we would maybe do in the playoffs. Obviously I think people look back to the Niners game. What was it last season where they got guys all banged up? So even if Clifford is called up to the 53 or he's active or he's elevated off of the practice squad this week, I wouldn't take that as an indication of, you know, Love status or Malik status. I know, you know, they're both banged up and it would kind of be weird from like a PR perspective, right? But I don't think that necessarily means that they're prepping Sean Clifford to play. It's just, you know, you want that emergency third quarterback in a playoff game just in case something weird happens, especially if these guys are a little banged up coming into it.
Would you do Sean Clifford or would you Alex Magoo it and actually have somebody that could maybe help you on teams and help you on, I guess, theoretically as a wide receiver as well with the banged up injuries at wide receiver. And then actually also have like he could be your emergency third quarterback that you wouldn't actually have to carry as an emergency third quarterback.
I don't know what the rules are. Like, can he only play quarterback? Does the CBA strictly define what a quarterback is?
So
I don't know.
If he was the actual emergency third quarterback, then yes. Well, that's a great question too. But I'm saying like more of like, could he be somebody that is like actually active on game day? So instead of having to be like a third quarterback, you actually are getting something. Cause if you're Sean Clifford and you're active on game day, now granted they get the extra spot, so it really doesn't hurt you all that much or at all, I should say. But like, I guess that makes sense in and of itself that it doesn't cost you the extra spot. So yeah, if you're going to just activate Magoo, it probably doesn't make sense. I'm talking in circles.
I just haven't really seen him play wide receiver. I know that he did in the summer, but I didn't pay close attention to it. The only thing I remember of him playing wide receiver or tight end or anything was that he hurt Jair that one time. Jair let it slip, and teams seemed to get pretty mad about that situation.
I wonder, it felt like always to me that he was like some sort of scout team sort of player that either to imitate a mobile quarterback or a Taysom Hill or whatever. It almost felt like they kind of wanted him on the team to be able to play a variety of different roles on scout team, whether it was mobile quarterback or tight end, wide receiver, whatever they needed him for, he could kind of go out and do that. And I think that's kind of his value because he's like almost 30. There's no developmental upside here for a quarterback turned wide receiver that's almost 30 years old. So that's my guess.
And the scout team quarterback thing is something that happens. When I worked at XFL, the Steelers tried to sign PJ Walker to a 1 week practice squad contract to simulate Lamar Jackson in practice, sure. For example. We didn't let him out of the contract because he was like one of our franchise guys. We were paying him like $200,000 or something like that. And then I was looking recently and Emory Jones, I don't know how much college football you watch, but Emory Jones got signed by the Falcons practice squad. And I was like, what the hell is Emory Jones? Like he must be there to run the option in practice. And then, you know, I look up their schedule and I think they were playing, their next game was like the Carolina Panthers or something. You get Bryce Young out there and you're like, okay, that's why he's doing that. Cause you know, Penix isn't going to be running scout team and he's a left-handed quarterback anyway. So you can't really simulate that. So yeah, I mean, the mobile quarterback in practice stuff is definitely something that teams look at. You kind of need at least one of those guys in practice.
So outside of the Jordan Love situation, what other takeaways? Was there anything else that you felt actually mattered in this weirdo, bizarro kind of preseason-ish game?
So Watson goes down.
Yep.
Right? We think it's an ACL. I know, who is it? Rappaport reported that it could be more than that, which is not great. If you guys are – I've blown out my knee twice, right? I've torn my ACL twice. One was a clean tear. It was just my ACL. I was able to come back pretty quickly off of that. The big thing that you're going to worry about is a meniscus, or if you get like an unhappy triad type of situation where you're tearing like your MCL and LCL.
Yeah.
And it's all, you know, three of your four ligaments in there. So the fact that they're like, it could be more, a little bit worrisome. Meniscus is a pretty big issue. You can kind of clean it out, but it doesn't really recover. It's kind of like a shock pad, if you think about it that way. So you're trying to get off the rough edges. I mean, if you guys followed any of the Bakhtiari stuff, I'm sure you guys are familiar with meniscuses at this point.
Yeah.
But what I thought was interesting, I don't know if you can play Jayden Reed and Bo Melton together with the way that this offense is constructed. And LaFleur is, you know, we've made fun of him before, right? Talking about how he's a size queen and he only looks at certain type of wide receivers and stuff like that. And Melton and Jayden Reed aren't really his type of wide receivers, right? He's really looking at guys who are like 205, can help block in the run game, all that stuff. I think for run first teams like this, you can have one of those guys, right? Like the Niners back in the day, you could have a Marquise Goodwin, but he's like the one small receiver that you can have, right? Once you start doing stuff like giving Jayden Reed jet sweep touches and you're asking Bo Melton to block for that, right? That's where you run into problems. So it's hard to get two of those guys not involved in the run game in some way, shape, or form, right? You're going to have to block someone. And that's why I think, you know, Malik Heath has made a couple plays the past couple weeks. We know that he does all the nitty gritty stuff. He's like the only guy that Bisaccia in what, 3-4 years has really used on special teams as a wide receiver, as like a non-returner type of guy.
Yep.
I would not be surprised if, you know, he sees an uptick in snap count just because, you know, they want to continue to use Jayden Reed as that guy, you know, who's the non-blocking receiver, I guess, if the way you want to think about it. If someone tells you blocking doesn't matter at receiver, they don't know what they're talking about. I mean, if you want to run the ball the way the Packers want to run the ball, I mean, it is a factor, period.
Yep. And they've got good blockers. And I do think Malik Heath is one of those as well. I do feel like you could kind of get even a little sense of it from Matt in the press conference. It felt like Malik's done everything he can and he's earned more playing time, especially with Christian being out. I was thinking the same thing going into this game. It would not surprise me one iota if we saw a decent helping of Malik Heath in this game. I don't know if that is the answer. I don't know if that really helps you a ton in the passing game. I don't know if that's what gets it to click by any means, but I do think we're going to see more of him as well. And I like, something's got to click at some point here. That this to me is still, and again, I know it was a weird game and you had some injuries on offense. And obviously once Jordan went out, everything was kind of just off the rails by that point. But it still feels like this pass offense in particular is just a little bit far too disjointed. The Jayden Reed situation right now is just weird. It doesn't seem like he can, he seems like a confident dude. And I don't know like exactly what's going on right now, but It just doesn't feel like there's that overall confidence there. And they've got to figure out how to get that offense, specifically the passing offense. Go ahead.
I think Reed made some nice catches.
He did later, you know, yeah.
He caught, you know, two of the Malik balls that we haven't seen him catch those from Love recently, right? Yeah. I think, what, he had three carries. Two of them were blown blocks on the perimeter that ended up going. I think they went backwards, both of them. And then the other one was a fumble, which I don't even know what you want to do. I mean, they showed the tight copy of Reed on the broadcast. I mean, it's high and tight. That ball just gets punched out. I mean,
yep.
It's not like he wasn't protecting the football or anything. It's just, it is what it is. So I do wonder if, I think that there's a real conversation about Jaden Reed being a manufactured touch guy and whether that's the route the team wants to go on. I know, you know, first week of fantasy playoffs, he got what, zero touches. Everyone got very mad about that. They made him, it was a narrative that was out there. And then LaFleur almost immediately was like, yeah, we got to start figuring out ways to get him the ball. And just kind of like force feed him. I don't know how much of that you really want to do. Especially if Bo Melton is the other guy who's out there on the field blocking for him. Right. So
yeah,
I think Jaden Reed got three touches, two of them were TFLs. I think both of them were blown blocks by Bo Melton, at least two blown blocks on the perimeter. And then the other one was a fumble, and you know, he just got that thing punched out and he was carrying it high and tight and all that stuff. So I do wonder if it's like, do we just run the offense? Do we just, you know, not try to force feed Jaden Reed? I understand he's the most productive receiver out of the bunch. But do you just kind of let the ball spray as the defense dictates it? Is Reed a guy that, you know, you have to get him going early on? I'm not sure that that's the case. I mean, I know a couple weeks ago they lost a game where he had zero touches, but there were other routes to win football games too, right? I think it was something like minus six EPA on the three Reed carries this week. So that definitely hurt Green Bay for sure.
I saw Archon. I don't know if he has a first name, but I saw he wrote about it at on Acme Packing Company. I was reading that a little bit earlier. It was an interesting article over there. But it's an interesting concept. I still think I don't think that you have to necessarily manufacture touches for him. I don't know if there's times where you just kind of, you know, set up plays where he's the primary read. If it's not there, don't force it, so, sort of thing. I do feel like he, especially with Christian being out, has got to find a way to be an impactful player in this offense. But I do agree that, like, just getting him an end around or reverse or a you know, toss sweep or something like that just for the sake of it isn't necessarily the right situation either. They've got to find a way to get multiple of these wide receivers really going in rhythm, I think, going into this game against Philly.
Yeah, for sure, because at some point you're going to need to throw the ball and in an obvious passing situation. This is going to be a fun matchup for sure. Okay. I don't know if you want to get into it already. But
Before we get there, a couple things before we get there. When you mentioned at the beginning what your concern was, and when you said Jordan Love is your concern, I wasn't sure for a moment if you were going to say the thumb there, the issue, or like you're concerned with Jordan Love, the quarterback, because there seems to be some angst, frustration, concern over his overall play as leader of the pack at the moment. How do you feel about when he is healthy, how he's been playing QB1 position as of right now? Can you believe it? It's playoff football, and that means it's time for Green Bay to go on a win streak and for you to go on a win streak with Prize Picks. And right now on Prize Picks, you can win up to 1,000 times your money, and that's because Prize Picks is the best place to get real money action while watching your favorite sports. Prize Picks also offers a variety of weekly promotions. I've been telling you guys, you got to get in on Taco Tuesday when Prize Picks discounts select player projections up to 25% to provide even more value for your lineups. You can make your picks in fewer than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. Now this week, I'm going with Jordan Love to get hot and throw multiple touchdowns. I'm also going with Saquon Barkley to have a big week, and I also expect Baltimore's offense to have a massive week, so I'm going to be utilizing a ton of their starters as well, including Lamar Jackson and King Henry. The best part is that you can download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup by using code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. Run your game.
I mean, I just feel like I kind of understand the type of quarterback that he is, right? I've seen the numbers where, you know, I saw this morning someone tweeted out, like, since week 12, Jordan Love is, like, number one in QBR and all these other stats and things like that. But at the same time, he's a guy, if things are muddy around his feet, he's not going to be comfortable. And this offensive line got pushed back. I don't know if those are necessarily counted as, like, pressures, sure. Right? You see all these numbers where the Packers are, you know, one of this top-ranked pass rushing unit. But, you know, you look at this past game, you look at the second Lions game where, you know, they're getting dog-walked by defensive ends wearing numbers in the 60s and stuff like that. I don't know if those get counted as pressures, but those certainly impact the way Jordan throws the ball. And he's a really long player. He has a long delivery, right? In terms of his ability to bail out of the pocket, it takes him a while to get going just in terms of, you know, his quickness and stuff like that. So he's a guy that you got to protect, and you can't really give ground like that. So when Rashid Walker is getting his butt kicked, you know, you're running into some issues. The other thing too is, like, how many throws did Jordan even have in this game? Was it like 12? Like,
yeah. Something like that.
So I'm not going to overreact to that. Obviously you need a good pass rush plan against Philly. Fangio is really good. You know, they're basically going to be playing the scheme that, you know, Barry ran against the offense for, you know, the entire first half of Jordan's career. So he should have, you know, things shouldn't be a surprise for him. I'm not too worried about his
until they run
play.
Some man coverage and they don't know how to. I'm just kidding.
So that's an interesting conversation. A quarterback should be able to identify man coverage at the line of scrimmage and be able to get into a play that can beat it. LaFleur makes it sound like it's a play calling issue on his side. But then we also have the evidence of the 2-minute drill in the Seahawks game where that clock isn't moving fast enough for Jordan, where, you know, they end up taking way too much time off the clock. They could have gone for a touchdown. They end up having to kick a field goal at the end of the first half.
Yep.
I do wonder how they feel about Jordan's ability at the line of scrimmage and whether that's something Jordan wants to push for or Jordan's just okay with LaFleur running the show. Obviously there's like the cans and stuff like that, but I'm talking about like actual audibles, right?
Yep.
Cans are mostly in the run game when, you know, wide receivers are tightened to the formation. Everyone can hear the can, stuff like that. You see them do the, you know, the helmet tap thing, right? And the wide receivers do it back to let them know that, you know, they heard the message and all that stuff. But if they need to, like, get into a new play completely, can they do that right now? I don't know if there's an answer.
Doesn't seem like it.
Doesn't seem like it. But I would want to know, like, when LaFleur is comfortable with that and what Jordan's aptitude for that is. I mean, I understand that that's not something that, like, teams just throw out there and tell you straight up in a press conference, but it does seem like a lot of these issues that we've seen can be solved by, you know, Jordan kind of giving the keys a little bit more.
I agree. I'm very intrigued by it as well, because I'm with you. It should be something that you're, unless there's a crazy disguise on it, there should be, you know, a fairly easy identifier if they're going to be in man or zone. And you would hope that if you're in a zone beater and they're in man, that you have some sort of tool at your disposal to be able to check out of that in some sort of way. But maybe there's not, or maybe they don't trust your, I don't want to, like, hypothesize, you know, I have no idea. I don't know what it is, but it doesn't seem like there's maybe enough of that built in as a fail safe of, like, if we get this, we need to go to this and make it so that the call can be right. If they identify it in the correct way, I don't know why that can't happen, but it hasn't seemed to have happened at a high enough level at this point.
Yeah. And there are plays where, you know, you can have a zone side and a man side in terms of, like, the beaters, right? So you can pick one pre-snap, and then, you know, if something gets weird, you're looking to the other side to kind of bail you out. But that kind of takes away like backside cutters, if that makes sense. Like they always talked about this with like Brady. Brady, when he wants to start on, so if he's starting a progression to the right, right, he wants to go, you know, scan to the right, to the middle of the field, but his eyes never want to go left of that football, right? So you're basically running like a half field read, and then on the backside, you're getting, you know, cutters, you're getting digs, you're getting drags, you're getting stuff like that. Sorry, sickness. One of the best things that LaFleur and Love do is, you know, throw that backside dig at this point, right? I would say that's probably the best ball that Love can throw right now. So if you are running some of these beaters, right, these combo beaters where it's zone on one side, man on one side, are you taking some of the best throws that Love can make right now out of the game at the same time? Like that, it becomes a bit more complicated situation when you start calling those. That's why I'm wondering, like, can he just check it at the line? Can he check it at the line? Yeah. And, you know, we can find one route that can beat, you know, some of these zone coverages. If we get into a man situation, they bait us into it. It looks like man, and then they drop out in the zone. I think there's a lot of possibilities for this offense to evolve, because it's good. It's definitely better in the run game for sure than it is in the pass game right now. I mean, they run like five passing concepts as like their staples, and then they have like, you know, wrinkles and stuff off of that. A lot of drive, a whole lot of drive.
Yeah. And it's funny too, because I look back at this and I know they've made some hay against some bad teams during this time, but like in their last seven games, they've scored over 30 five times. They averaged 30 points per game exactly in their last seven. Their worst performance was on Sunday against the Bears with 22 points. So like the floor has been 22 points and they're averaging 30. So it's not like they're completely lost on offense. It's not like they're not finding ways to put up points. It hasn't been clean enough. It hasn't felt in rhythm enough. But overall, like they're still a top 10 offense by any stretch of the imagination. It just feels like there's so much more meat on that bone if they could just kind of get into a rhythm offensively. Just hasn't quite felt like they've been able to get there.
That's what I mean. Just room to grow. There's definitely room to grow for this offense, you know, even with Watson dropping out and stuff. And, you know, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is just lunch out there for the Eagles. He is not playing well right now. So
he's a big player. Like he's a boom bust guy.
He yaps. He'll do the flex when, you know, he's covering a guy, the guy's wide open and the quarterback just misses, right?
Or like, drops it. He's
just an annoying player to go against. I know Eagles fans, like when he's doing well, they love him, but then they just like turn on him immediately. He's a much worse version of like Keyshawn for Eagles fans. Like that's how they treat him. So I expect the Packers to just kind of attack him all game if possible.
He's
help me God, if Cooper DeGene makes one play, we'll never hear the end of it.
That's going to be my last podcast. This is the free Cooper DeGene pick six in this game. I might just call it a wrap at that point. I didn't even think of that. That's going to be a nightmare if anything like that happens. But yeah, I do think there's ways to attack this Philly defense. We'll get into all that. Before, one last thing from a defensive standpoint, I saw you tweet out about Javon Bullard. Also wanted to ask you about Ketan Oladapo. I thought that was one of the really interesting takeaways in this one, is that they basically benched Eric Stokes kind of until very late in the game, decided to go Bullard in the slot with Nixon and Valentine outside, and then Oladapo and Xavier McKinney at safety was their ultimate decision of how they were going to play this. And then a little bit later in the game, they kind of did some dime stuff. Stokes got in, Ballantyne got in, but it was Oladapo. But your thoughts on Oladapo and then some of the maybe struggles for Javon Bullard?
So I haven't really rewatched the All 22 yet. I've been semi-busy today. So I didn't notice Ketan Oladapo a lot at safety. in terms of, like, you know, him getting picked on and stuff like that, which is good because they played him in the box more and played McKinney, you know, as the middle of the field guy a little bit more, which is what I was hoping for, right? Yep. I think that makes more sense for sure. Totally, if you just, you know, Ketan Oladapo, we all knew that he was going to be a strong safety type. PFF had him graded as, like, one of the best run defending safeties in the past draft class and stuff like that.
They had a 70-something grade on him in this game, too. I haven't watched the all 22 of him yet either, but PFF had a solid grade on him this week.
Yeah, that checks out. I will say, like, I didn't notice him a lot. I didn't notice Zane a lot when Zane was in at safety, you know, in previous weeks. The guy I did notice was Bullard, right? Blowing some of those coverages, like the touchdown where he's playing the half instead of the middle of the field and stuff like that. Bullard's had a rough stretch of it. I know he's a rookie who's coming off an injury and stuff like that. He's playing multiple positions. But this past game, he was getting beat a little bit. The week before, he was getting beat against the Lions. They were trying to play the Lions in man coverage to stop those throws over the middle of the field, and that's when he was getting ran away and getting beat by guys like, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown and stuff like that. So
that's a rough matchup, by the way, for Bullard.
Yes. For sure, but I'm not sure if he's one of the six best guys, you know, in the secondary right now. I think it was interesting.
I think he very much is not when everyone is healthy. If Evan Williams and Zane Anderson, I'm even saying Zane Anderson in this conversation, but, and certainly obviously if Jair was, we know that that's not going to happen. But like if this was a complete healthy defensive backfield, I think we're having a real conversation of like, all right, is this the right person to be out on the field with everything right now, with obviously no Jair? It didn't sound like Matt was super confident about Evan Williams coming back this week. Right. Of course, they'll give it the week or whatever, but that did not, there was a big difference between optimism about Quay and like, yeah, I guess he's questionable for now about Evan Williams. And then Zane is still in concussion protocol. So it's an interesting one though, depending on who's healthy and who's not in this game.
For sure. And I think, especially post Jair, right? Knowing that Jair wasn't going to be available at least early on in the playoffs. I know everyone floats out the, like, if they play in the Super Bowl, he can come back and stuff like that. I do kind of like the decision of just rolling with Nixon and Carrington Valentine outside and just knowing, like, Chicago's not going to throw outside the past couple games. I mean, we haven't really gotten that many teams who have wanted to throw two outside receivers, right? And especially in the zone defense. Our cornerbacks haven't really been tested, right? Yep. I know everyone points to the Eric Stokes numbers and they're like, Eric Stokes has only given up 50 yards or whatever in like the past 6 weeks. And I'm like, I don't know how many wide receivers have run an out route against us. I don't know how many receivers are running vertical and getting targeted, right? Everything is over the middle of the field right now. So I don't really care if a wide receiver runs away from Eric Stokes' zone. That doesn't tell me anything about how productive Stokes is being as an outside cornerback.
I was talking to one of the beat guys, and he was asking me about like what I saw out of Eric Stokes. And I'm like, well, earlier in the season, it was a complete nightmare. And like every time anything he was targeted, it was a completion and it was a major problem. Like over the past few weeks, but prior to this game, I'm like, there's been no issue. Like he's not giving up any yardage, but I'm like, he's not targeted in his area either. And it's been a lot of just him playing his zone and not getting targets. So it's like, there's no negatives on the tape. Like there's nothing that you're going to point to for the most part and be like, oh my God, look how terrible this was. But there also wasn't anything of like, he's breaking on a ball. I don't think he still has a pass breakup to his name since his rookie season. Like there's been nothing on tape that makes you go like, oh yep, there's been a corner turned and he looks awesome and now he's shutting down wide receivers. No, it's more to me a circumstance of how they're defending and he's been being put in a good position where he can do what he's asked to do and he's not asked to do a whole heck of a lot.
Yeah, I mean, tackles are a weird thing, right? I know this is a conversation we used to have in draft stuff like a decade ago where people would bring up linebacker tackles and a lot of times tackles are the offense choosing the path of least resistance right now, right? And with the Packers situation over the middle of the field. I mean, they played well against the Chicago Bears from a defensive standpoint, I thought. Chicago must have had probably around 200 200 total yards. It's not like they're getting gashed or anything. But, you know, you look at the Miami game, you look at the Lions game, the Vikings game, the path of least resistance for those teams was all over the middle of the field. It wasn't on the perimeter. So they were not a priority. A team that will be attacking the perimeter is the Philadelphia Eagles, who has two guys on the outside, a short quarterback who likes to run around to the sideline and doesn't throw over the middle of the field very often, right? So that's where I understand wanting to go with Nixon and Carrington Valentine on the outside. If you just want to say, hey, we need the reps, we need to make sure that we're getting good looks in preparation for the Eagles, because that, you know, coming into the week, it was, I don't know, it was like what, like a 78% chance or something like that on like the New York Times playoff machine that the Packers were going to end up getting matched against the Eagles going into the first round of the playoffs. So definitely a big, big game for the quarterbacks this week. I mean, it's almost certainly going to come down. It's going to be that. And then what's the situation at linebacker, right? It's going to be, you know, can you stop the tight end? Can you stop Saquon Barkley? Are you going to let Saquon Barkley get the rail route touchdown out of the backfield, you know, matched up in man coverage with Isaiah McDuffie this time around? Like, that's going to be how they get their chunk plays. The Packers are doing a pretty good job of stopping the run game. I'm not really worried about that. They've been doing a good job of stopping quarterback scrambling game. I'm not really worried about that. It's the perimeter wide receivers, and then Saquon going deep out of the backfield. Do we have the athleticism? Do we have the matchups at the linebacker level to kind of keep up with that? That's what I'm worried about.
They were in man on that play on, were they, I can't remember, on Saquon, right? Where McDuffie. So. Yeah. They don't play a ton of man anymore. Not that that's necessarily like, you know, they can still attack obviously in different ways up the seam with Saquon when they want to, but I'd have to think if Quay is healthy enough to play, that this is going to be a massive amount of Quay and Cooper. And I don't know how much we're going to see McDuffie or Eric. Well, in base, obviously, we'll see.
Wilson is like, maybe you might not be able to play him. You
I
might
totally not agree.
Be able to play Wilson in this game. And totally McDuffie, agree. Limited base snaps. Only. Yeah, I mean, the Vikings game, I think, probably should have if they thought playing Wilson was viable into the postseason, the Vikings game should have changed that. I mean, there were times where they were running two posts, I mean, basically into each other. And they were hitting, you know, in Tampa too. So basically, like, Eric Wilson is playing in the middle of the field, and they're hitting those behind him, and he just had no shot at covering either one of them. And it's just like, dude, he's just not fast.
They were attacking him. They were attacking. Yeah. I mean, O'Connell knew. He totally knew that was going to be a weak spot. And I think Eric Wilson, especially for at this stage of his career, to like reinvent himself, and like he's supposed to be. Like
he's a vet. Didn't he get like the veteran
it's
exemption?
Just slightly more. Like I think slightly more than the vet minimum. Like he's supposed to be like a fifth or sixth linebacker, special teams guy that you can use in a pinch. And I think that is he's perfect for that. Right. Like this is not one of these like special teams guys where if he gets on the field, it's like, oh my God, what, like this guy cannot play.
It's not Ty Summers. Ty Summers.
No, exactly. Right. So like, he fits that role perfectly, but when it does become a situation where it's like, oh, he's your starting linebacker playing every single play, now we've got problems, and it was definitely an issue in that game.
For sure. Yeah, so, I mean, Quay coming back is going to be a huge deal. I thought for a while, I was like, is Evan Williams the cog that makes this machine go? But then, you know, Zane and Oladapo seem to play better than Bullard. I do worry about Bullard a little bit, but slots for the most part are going to be running stuff in the middle of the field. Hurts doesn't throw that. I mean, he wants to scramble right. He wants to throw to the perimeter. That's who he is. You know, a lot's going to be on the corners. I do wonder how much of the rotation with Valentine and Stokes early on in the season was because of Valentine's ability to impact the run game. And I do wonder if there's a point in this game where you're like, we just need Stokes out there to be able to kind of be a bigger guy and, you know, take on some of these blocks and stuff and make an impact there when Saquon Barkley, you know, starts getting ahead of steam. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the situation. I just don't think that like the Stokes like yards given up per coverage snap numbers, like they just do not matter to me over the past couple weeks because of the offenses that they've been that they've been playing. And I know, you know, that might sound like cope for the guy who got cut up, and they got the video of me threatening you and your family.
Tyler,
for
you thank Tyler. You thank Tyler for that.
Yeah. But genuinely, like, if Stokes was playing better, I'd be. Buddy, I hope Stokes has the game of his life next week.
Yep.
Like, I have no problem admitting that I was wrong. But
you know, like, I, more, just, I will gladly say if I'm wrong, if somebody proves me wrong. Like, sign me the hell. When I did the exact same thing with Quay, and then Quay had the two greatest games of his life immediately following it. I literally did a thing, and Tyler cut it up. Like, I think I'm done with the Quay Walker experience. And then Quay Walker, the next two games, literally played like the best two games of his life. And I'm like, awesome. I will, like, and I gladly, like, be my guest. Go out and play like an all pro the rest of the time, and I will gladly eat that crow. And it will, instead of my Luigi's victory Monday and eating pizza, I will eat that crow every single time. Sign me the hell up. Go get it, Quay. I'm happy to.
Yeah. Quay, I need you this week. I really do.
Going back to what you were saying too about the Stokes Valentine thing, it's interesting though. I almost equate it to what you were saying earlier with Bo Melton and Jaden Reed of, like, can you have both those guys on the field at the same time when Jair's out there as one of your corners already? Yeah. And he's not exactly the greatest run stopping tackling. Can you put Carrington on the other side? And now it's like, all right, now we've got two of these guys where, you know, coverage is good, but in some certain run situations, we've got two corners that are probably a liability more often than not. And that might just not be attainable for what they're trying to do defensively.
Yeah, maybe. But I think, are we on the same page with Nixon? Nixon's coming back and he's going to be a starting outside corner on this team, right?
He's going to be a starting corner. Yeah.
Maybe
I could still see a world in which, depending on what happens and what corners they get, that he's a slot guy again. I could see a world in which that exists, but he's going to be going into the season in, if at very worst, in competition for one of the starting spots, and in all likely just a hand me the starting position spot.
Yeah. He's playing. I told you guys, man, he's playing better than you guys think.
I agree.
And he's fitting a lot of this stuff so hard. I mean, in terms of the energy and stuff, like, he's one of the momentum swingers on this defense, and you need some of those guys. You really do.
Nixon, for me, over the past 6 weeks, I have a plus 1.65 grade on him, which is a massive. In fact, I bet only Cooper is, like, might be the only one that's bigger during that time. And again, this is not this most recent week. Kenny's actually had a pretty solid grade up until, I don't know, again, I didn't grade this week yet. Gary's at a plus 1.65. Cooper's at plus 2.15. And then Nixon at 1.65. They're just from over the last, again, 6 weeks prior to this week, because I haven't graded it yet. I mean, he's right up there with anyone that I have graded on defense. I definitely thought there were some hiccups early this year. I actually think he's been better as an outside corner than he has been in the slot in his career.
I do too.
But it's not like, if you were to look at his, and again, not that relative athletic, but if you were to look at, like, his athletic chart, that wouldn't have surprised me, because you look at, like, his agility scores and things like that, and like, it's not that good. He's more of, like, kind of a straight line guy with some playmaking ability, who's willing to come up and tackle. Like, his profile kind of fits a little bit better, in my opinion, at least, as an outside guy. And it's kind of proving that at this point.
Yeah. And I mean, just think about the return game, right? Like, kick returns are more straight line, like, just explosive, put your head down, you're going to explode, one cut and run. And punt returners are more wiggle guys. I mean, they want him as a kick returner, not a punt returner too. So I think that kind of makes a little sense. So yeah, I mean, I think we know who we want to play. I think the Packers defense knows who they want to play. And I think they ended up in the right spot for the most part. I think you can have a conversation about Bullard, but they're not going to bench Bullard. He's a second round rookie and stuff like that. So I understand that. But this feels like kind of like the first time that they have the right lineup out there on the defensive side, as long as, you know, Quay is healthy or something like that. Obviously, if Eric Wilson's in the middle of the field, that's definitely worrisome. But I'm happy about that result. It only took us 18 weeks to get there, We finally are playing the correct lineup.
Yep. Which is important. I hope they get either Evan or Zane back at that safety spot. I guess that's interesting too. If you don't get Zane back, if you don't get Evan back, Are you starting Catan against the Eagles as your? I'm assuming.
I'd rather have Catan out there than Bullard, based off of what I saw.
Yeah, I think that's true. That's an interesting one too. Hopefully, Evan or Zane can. I mean, again, it's not that Catan did anything bad in this game. But that's a really interesting aspect of this. Yeah, I'm very intrigued. I actually really
if Catan can play strong safety and you could get, you know, X to play in the middle of the field, and then everything is just perimeter game. Catan can help in the run game, maybe dissuade some of the Saquon stuff, and you just turn it into, okay, Jalen Hurts has to operate. I mean, that's kind of what you want to do when you're playing the Eagles. I mean, I know he's a highly paid quarterback and all that stuff, but
it's an interesting flaws in this game. It's an interesting setup too, where if you are working to really stop Saquon in the run, I mean, having your, obviously you're in a nickel, you've got your four down line or whatever we want to call them, two off ball linebackers. And then it's really Catan and Bullard as your sort of your other two guys that are in the box in that scenario.
Yeah.
Like that's a nice thing to have going against Saquon and to stack that box is a safety that looks like a linebacker in Catan. And obviously a physical attacking safety. Again, coverage has been an issue. Some angle taking has been an issue for Bullard, but he's willing to come up and tackle and is very willing and able to do so. So that's not a bad, you know, 8-man box to go up against with two guys on the outside and Xavier McKinney being the cleanup guy behind. That's not the worst case scenario if you're going to get Saquon.
For sure. And then if you get into bubble game, because I mean, that's a lot of their answers too, right? Is RPO game to the perimeter. If you're getting a lot of bubble game, maybe that's when you pull the ripcord on the Valentine situation and you're like, okay, Stokes, you got to go in because we're fitting, you know, basically outside run is what we're doing. So that, you know, you can free up and have Oladapo and Bullard chase it down without, you know, giving a whole lot of ground from that cornerback position. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of people made it seem like the Eagles were like this thing to avoid, this big, scary team in the NFC. I never understood it. I always thought Detroit and Minnesota were a lot better. I think I'm going to go through probably tomorrow and rewatch the Eagles Packers game and just like list out all of the mistakes the Packers had to make that led to them losing at the very end. I mean, they should have had that thing wrapped up. I'm not saying like guaranteed win. Obviously those wide receivers could like, either one of them could go for like 150 yards against one of these corners, and I wouldn't be surprised.
Yep.
But test them. Make them win that way. Make Jalen Hurts win the game. Do it. Don't take it out of the offensive line's hand. Take it out of, you know, Saquon's hand. Put it in the perimeter wide receivers and just force it from the first snap on. And then hopefully the offense can just keep up in a, you know, shootout type of situation.
It is annoying how many answers Philly has. They have the outside wide receivers. They've got the running quarterback that can beat you from the pocket too, assuming Jalen Hurts is healthy enough for this one. Saquon Barkley in the backfield. Like, you do have to stop the run. You have to stop the quarterback run. You have to stop the outside wide receivers. Middle of the field is their biggest deficiency from a Green Bay standpoint. Like, there's just like answers everywhere. It's very annoying and frustrating, but I still think Green Bay can find a way to come away with this one.
Yeah, for sure. They have a chance. I think that line makes sense. What, it was like 3.5 last time I checked.
It went up to 4.5. It is now equal that four at four right now.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that sounds about right, especially with the Love situation. If Love was healthy, I probably wouldn't go above 3.5. But you know, still a question mark. So yeah, I'll be watching the injury report like a hawk and seeing everyone's tweets from practice, just trying to make sure, like, can Love feel his hand this week? I would like to know if Love can feel his hand before Sunday.
What do you think the over-under is?
Like 47?
You're pretty close. 45.5. 45.5.
Ooh, a little lower.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be more pointy than that.
I think so too. I think so too. But Green Bay's offense is a little bit weird right now, and Green Bay's defense is actually playing pretty decent right now. So I don't know, maybe not, but we'll see. I would guess the over on that too, but it's actually the third. I mean, there's only six games, so, but it's actually the third lowest over under of the week. Chargers Texans is the lowest at 42.5. Ravens Steelers is next at 43.5. Then Packers Eagles at 45.5. Then Bills Broncos and Rams Vikings are both at 47.5. And the highest is Commanders Buccaneers at 50.5.
Commanders Buccaneers is such a funny matchup because it's just like neither of you are contenders. You're losing next week. Congrats on the extra football game. I mean, it might as well be a bowl game, right? That's the Pop-Tart Bowl of the NFL.
I think that's probably true. I guess it depends somewhat. Because you could end up, I don't think it's likely, but you could theoretically, if the Packers somehow found a way to win and the Rams somehow found a way to win, you could end up with whoever wins Commanders Buccaneers versus the Rams. So you could end up weirdly, but now we're really getting upsets everywhere, I guess, at that point.
Yeah.
All right. A couple other things just really quick before we get you out of here. What are your thoughts on the whole Matt LaFleur talk on the interwebs?
Fire him. He's no good.
Get him out.
He's
now.
No good. He's only only second all time in career wins in those first 100 games or whatever. I don't know. It's ridiculous. I understand he made a mistake. It was a weird situation at that end of the game. He talked through it, and he was planning on going for it. What? It was a 3rd and 3. They lost the yard, got spooked, called the timeout. Sideline, Bisaccia convinces him to kick the ball. It is what it is. It ended up being the right decision in the end, but he didn't need to call the timeout. He's admitted that. The coverage that they ended up playing was a mistake on that. What? There was 15 seconds left. He said, that needed to be a call where they had 12 or less. He even said in the presser, I've never heard a coach say it so bluntly, but he was like, we got off the ball too quickly. Once the guy was down, we needed to lay on it and take a couple seconds off of it. I don't think I've ever heard a coach actually admit that in public, but yes, I agree. You did need to have your team lay on the football for a couple more seconds and drain some more clock. The team will get over it. It's not that big of a deal. Plus, it didn't end up even mattering at the end because of the Commander situation. So.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah, I thought this was maybe his, like, my least favorite game of his as a coach. And, like, just in general, how they went about preparing for this game, not picking whether or not they wanted to kind of win or not care about it, resting Jacobs, resting Kenny.
Through the game.
Yeah. And then sort of resting Kenny and then bringing him back for the final drive. And then, like, just pick a damn lane one way or the other. This is the most, and again, I don't know if this is like, 10% of the fan base that's just being really, really loud, or if it's like more than that. I almost posted a poll just to be like, Matt LaFleur, yes or no, or, you know, like whatever, something like that, just to sort of get a feel for like what actual percentage is this? Because sometimes it's tough to tell. This is the most I think there's ever been anything where I'm like, I feel like I'm going crazy. Like, what in the hell is actually going on right now? I can't even remotely fathom the thought or idea that this would be a thing. And it's clearly not a thing from a Packers standpoint. It's not even a lukewarm seat at this point for Matt LaFleur, nor should it be, but it feels like the weirdest thing ever. And I mean, I get, anyone's welcome to feel how they want to feel. I'm not telling anyone how to fan in this situation, but like it is one of the most crazy, like hot takey things that I think I've ever experienced covering the team. And I've seen, keep Janice. I've seen Sean Clifford is going to be better than Jordan Love. I've seen there should be an owner for the team. I've seen a lot of crazy stuff. I just can't fathom this one. I don't know why. It just seems weird to me.
Yeah, I was more worried about LaFleur last year before, what was it, the Chargers game when Love really started to figure it out.
Yeah.
That was the only time that I was really worried about LaFleur's status. This year, I'm not. I mean, it seems like I've also seen people get mad about the defensive coordinator and stuff like that. Halfley's done a really good job this year, man. Do you guys understand what you guys are watching? Halfley's in a good spot. You could be like the coordinator stuff people bring up every once in a while. Like Bisaccia has improved the special teams, period. Halfley's doing a very good job on the defensive side right now. Is he Flores? No. Flores should be a head coach and would be a head coach if he wasn't suing the NFL. You can't judge. The standard cannot be, is he as good as Flores or not, right?
Just really quick, I think that's part of the thing that's going on right now is that in the division, this is not a normal thing. In the division are arguably maybe the two best coaches in the NFL, or at least in the conversation, in Dan Campbell and in Kevin O'Connell. Yeah. And then maybe the best defensive coordinator, at least the hottest name, and what he's doing defensively. Didn't obviously work super great against Detroit yesterday or on Sunday, but is Flores. And I think the fact that these are so fresh and that Green Bay went 0-4 against those two teams is probably maybe tainting the entire discussion a little bit. But it yes, Halfley, literally just, we've been hoping and praying for a top 10 scoring defense and a top 10 DVOA defense and just any sort of top 10 defense. And Jeff Halfley gets you there in his first year with some clear deficiencies from a pass rush standpoint and things like that.
Everyone's been hurt off of the line of scrimmage at some point this season.
Jair has barely played this season. He's done awesome, in my opinion. Yes, in some big games and some clutch situations, the defense hasn't come up. That's what happens against really good teams. They're going to figure out ways to, come up with plays. That's why they're really good teams. But yeah, I think he's done awesome. I think Matt LaFleur is doing an unbelievable job overall with this team. Can they be better? Are there ways that they can improve? Absolutely. But I have zero concern about either of them right now.
Yeah, and the game management stuff has kind of been a new thing for LaFleur in terms of him having faults, right? That's not...
He's been really good at it over previous seasons.
That's what I mean. When you're talking about a weird situation where you're we were planning on going for it with a minute left and then we lost a yard. I didn't know if my kicker can kick from 55 yards. I needed to have a conversation so that I just didn't burn the clock. I mean, this is the opposite of that Seahawks game, right? Where Matt was like, I didn't want to call a timeout. I needed to call a timeout because we needed to discuss things in that situation. And then he does it and you're mad about that. I just don't understand. We're not even having this conversation if we get a stop on defense and there aren't three high defenders instead of two high defenders. You have a low hole guy who can make a tackle. And now the field goal is 65 yards instead of 51 or whatever it was. Yep. Right. So I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater because of that. I understand losing to the Bears sucks. This was a half-hearted attempt of a football game that did not need to happen. The impact of it wouldn't have mattered at all. Just forget about the whole damn thing and move on.
Nuke it. I'm right there with you. Last but not least, Mike McCarthy, Bears coach, who the Bears have already, I think, lined up 17,000 interviews. They're casting a wide net.
For times like this.
The last time they cast this wide of a net, they ended up with a CFL head coach as their head coach. So we'll see what happens. But Maybe Big Mike, Packers versus McCarthy as Bears coach. Where are the Bears going to go as head coach?
As someone who's worked with Mark Trussman before, hope they hire him again. Not as bright as you thought he is. Didn't they? Was it them or the Jets who brought in Gregson too? One of them brought in Gregson for the GM.
I don't think it was the Bears.
Fully appalled by that. I don't know if I've told this story before. Oliver Luck, who's Andrew Luck's father, ran the XFL when I was there.
Jets were the ones.
Mark Trussman tried to hire Gregson as his DPP, which is basically the GM position that we had. Oliver was like, I'm leaving the XFL if you bring in Gregson. That's how bad Gregson is. The Jets are not beating the all we do is watch ESPN all day allegations. They've interviewed two-thirds of the Lewis Riddick, Brian Greasy, Steve Levy booth.
I love that they were going to bring in Greenberg, but it's a different Mike Greenberg. So disappointed.
Good God, man. Have some pride. Rex Ryan is running around ESPN telling everyone that he's getting that job. Just an embarrassing franchise. The Bears.
Hey, if the Jets can bring back Rex Ryan, the Bears can bring back Mark Trestman. Do you know where Trestman is right now?
Is he in Canada again?
He's with Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers.
No. Really?
Yeah. He's an analyst? Senior offensive assistant.
Okay. Yeah, he's just watching film then. They don't let him touch the players. That makes sense.
Yes.
I don't know if there's a hire that the Bears can make that would have me super inspired if I was a Bears fan. I'm going to be honest, because I don't think it's going to be Ben Johnson. Right.
So I'm assuming you're in the belief that he's going to go to Jacksonville.
Ben Johnson.
Yeah.
I don't know where he's going to go. I just assume that he's going to take a better job than that.
The Belky thing in Jacksonville is really it's unbelievable.
Dude,
it's the most unbelievable.
What a champ. Ever. He's hiring like his fourth coach.
Hey, all power to him. Get after it. The fourth one's bound to be like you just luck into a good hire at that point, right? Like if you're given four chances, like one of them's got to turn out.
Dude, I think the cons are just totally hands off on that franchise, and Balky basically gets to operate as an owner. That's one of the more insane ones. I think the Colts was an insane thing. Just bringing back Steichen and Ballard after all the stuff that leaked out. And like, I don't think you're going to move on from Anthony Richardson. So you're just going to run it back. Like you had all this stuff leak from your locker room and you're just going to run it back. That's a mess. I think the Bears situation is just, there's too many cooks in the kitchen. I think they're pretty hands-off ownership model too. I think Kevin Warren, you know, he was Big Ten commissioner before he, you know, he went to Chicago. You get Ryan Poles there. He obviously wants to run the show. And then, you know, you're going to need to hire a head coach who probably is going to want input too, right? And I just don't know a hands-off ownership model with that many people trying to kind of stretch the franchise into, you know, their own individual directions. I don't know if you can ever be kind of like on the same page in that situation. Ultimately, someone has to be in charge and someone has to set the tone. I mean, I don't know if that there's a right or wrong way to do it, but at some point, someone's got to be at the top of the food chain. And I just don't think that there is that in Chicago. I mean, maybe Ben Johnson does take that job, but like, I doubt it. I mean, isn't the Patriots job better? I would assume. I mean, I know people were talking about Vrabel there. Like, Chicago has a quarterback. Great. Isn't Trevor Lawrence better than Caleb Williams at this point?
Yeah,
aren't they probably closer? And they have could Chicago trade Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze for Brian Thomas Jr. and Trevor Lawrence right now? They wouldn't be able to. So like, isn't Jacksonville a better job too? So you would figure Johnson's going to get his pick of everything, I would think.
Yeah, I would think so too. I'm going to say Brian Flores in Chicago with Josh McCown as offensive coordinator.
I don't know if Brian's going to get a job. He's still actively suing the league, man. Like,
so what's the NFL just tells the Bears you can't hire him?
I don't know. But I wouldn't be surprised if Flores is just in Minnesota for a long time. And
I don't like that.
I don't like it either. I want him out of the division. At least I can promise Ben Johnson's getting out of the division this year. But I don't know if anyone's going to hire Flores. I genuinely don't.
Yeah. We never really talked. One of the things that I'm most shocked about that never gets talked about is, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe, especially with all the Matt LaFleur stuff that goes along, I am shocked that we don't hear more about how when Matt LaFleur was hired, both Brian Flores and Dan Campbell were in the interview group for the group of coaches that they interviewed. I'm shocked that people don't bring up that the Packers interviewed Dan Campbell and that they went with Matt LaFleur.
Don't start this.
I know.
Don't start this.
You're going to threaten my family again.
The other thing too, like, the Packers only recently started spending on coordinators and coaches, honestly. Right. And that's part of being the model of being GM led. Right. So, I mean, you hired Barry, who was a retread. Right. You had the internal hirings at the special teams coordinator. Darren Rizzi told you no. Right. Yep. Went to the Saints. If you know anything about the Saints, they're not flush with money. You know, they're probably second behind the Cincinnati Bengals in terms of, you know, teams that spend the least on their franchise as a whole in the NFL. So I think the Halfley thing was a big thing in terms of kind of turning the corner for the Packers. When they hired LaFleur, they made him keep Pettine, right? So I don't know if either of those coaches would have been able to hire coordinators in the way that they've been able to do.
That's fair.
Outside of Green Bay. I think LaFleur had to earn that privilege, which is crazy. I'm happy that the team is spending on coaches now. They needed to. It was absurd.
I would love to know, because the whole talk was that Matt LaFleur had Mike Pettine on his list of potential defensive coordinators that he wanted to bring in if he was hired as head coach. I would love to know if that was like he really really wanted that, or if that was like, yeah, absolutely, I'd love to have Mike Pettine, just hire me for this damn job.
Right. I mean, he was a 1 year play caller. He was a 1 year play caller.
Yep.
And
it didn't go that great.
No, they were running like I formation stuff. If you guys remember that, Green Bay doesn't do that. They had to deal with the Mariota situation and Ryan Tannehill. Like, he was kind of a mystery box. I think he just wanted a job, and they were impressed by whatever he showed in the interview process. So,
weren't they playing Deion Lewis over Derrick Henry too?
I think going into the year, I think that was before LaFleur, and then LaFleur was the first, like, we're giving Derrick Henry a bunch of carries because Ryan Tannehill is our quarterback type of situation. So, yeah.
Fun times. All right, Justice, anything else you want to go over before we get out of here?
No, look out for that list this week of all the dumb things that we had to do to lose that Eagles game, because I'm going to painstakingly go through it. I'll probably have that up late Tuesday or early Wednesday.
Way to load the world with positivity on playoff week, Justice. Thanks a lot. We appreciate that.
I'm just, hey, that is positivity. I don't think it's going to happen again. It would be hard to mess up that bad. I mean, I said this after the game, and I still feel like that this way now. I don't think we've had a game slip out of our hands that bad since losing to the Seahawks in the NFC Championship game.
Was this the, hold on, I might have this list for you. I think I did the postmortem of that game, and now I want to see if I can find this really quick.
It was like 20 things that had to go wrong for the Packers to lose that game.
Hold on, I want to see if I can find this. I'm going to give this at least 5 seconds before I abandon it, but all right, you are now getting a post video edited version because Justice and I went on a rabbit hole search to see if we could find said tweets and lists that I was talking about. And it was out there. So there were 39 mistakes that I had put together out on Twitter following this game. So Justice, you don't have to do quite as much work, but here were the 39 issues that went wrong for the Packers. I believe in order. False start, late snap by Josh Myers, 12 men on the field, which negated a touchdown. False start on fourth down, had to punt instead of go for it. Missed protection on a Zach Bond sack. Holding on Rashid Walker in the red zone. Dontavian Wicks drop. Holding on Tucker Kraft in the red zone. Watson dropped a touchdown, plus had a Dobbs illegal pick, which was an iffy call. Love missed to Watson in the end zone. False start or probably neutral zone infraction on Kenny Clark. McKinney and McDuffie missed tackles. TJ Slayton, false start on fourth and one, or probably again, neutral zone infraction. Dontavian Wicks with a slip and a drop, took an extra point off the board, and then they failed the 2-point conversion. Jair missed a tackle. Quay missed Saquon completely on a touchdown run. Love should have been, there should have been a pick six to N'Kobe Dean, but N'Kobe Dean dropped it. False start on Rashid Walker. Jair missed tackle. Stokes and McDuffie missed tackles. Jair beat bad for a touchdown. Bullard took a bad angle. Josh Jacobs fumble. Thankfully, Bo Melton recovered that one. Illegal shift by Tucker Kraft. Love throws low to Jaden Reed over the middle. Love threw behind Dobbs. Dobbs couldn't hang on. Illegal shift. Illegal formation on a punt on McDuffie. Holding on Rashid Walker, which was a bit iffy. Love interception. Quay missed tackle. Love missed throw to Wicks. Jaden Reed drop. Braden Narveson missed field goal. Keyshawn Nixon drops a potential pick six. Kenny Clark hold, Stokes missed tackle, Bullard and Jair missed tackle, McDuffie missed tackle, McKinney offsides on a field goal.
Is that it?
That's all it took
for the Eagles to win?
Probably a couple more that we learned about after, too. Like Adrian Cooper lined up in the wrong gap on the Saquon Barkley touchdown run that we found about later that they basically talked about and said, yeah, he was actually lined up in the completely wrong gap. He was supposed to be right where they ran up the middle to Saquon Barkley. So that would have been number 40 as well.
McDuffie getting cooked? I don't even know if McDuffie getting cooked was on there.
I don't know that I have that as like it's not on there. I don't know if that's a quote unquote mistake. I actually would argue, and maybe people would disagree, that like considering that Saquon Barkley and where McDuffie had to kind of come from, the fact that he even like kind of remotely contested that at the end, I was actually like sort of pseudo impressed by the fact that he kind of got there and contested it based on the situation. But yeah, you could certainly add that on there as well.
Yeah. So there we go. It took a lot for that game to slip out of the Packers.
What was the final? They lost by
like 3 or something.
I think that was it. Like the missed field goal itself may have made up for it if Narveson just makes the field goal. They lost by 5, 34-29.
Okay. Because they were still driving at the end when Love got hurt and then Malik had to come in.
The only time Malik, I guess in this game too against Chicago. Yeah, you bookend the season with Malik Willis appearances at the end where he couldn't come back at the end. Actually, he did come back in the end in this one theoretically, just they couldn't hold on to it this time. All right. Where can we follow all of your amazing work? I'll get you out of here.
AcmePackingCompany.com. You can find me on Twitter.
Follow him. He's the absolute best. I enjoy these conversations every freaking week. Justice, hopefully we're talking about a Packers victory over the Eagles next week when we chat. Should be fun to break down one way or the other. It'll be a lot more fun if it's a win. It's not going to be anywhere near as fun if it's a loss, but I will look forward to the conversation either way. You can find him on Twitter at JUMOSQ. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for us today, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.